The following message is copyrighted by Westminster Theological Seminary. Duplication, distribution, or other use of all or any part of this message is not permitted without prior written consent. Please direct your inquiries to communications@wts.edu. For all other information, please visit the main website at www.wts.edu.
Alternative medicines. I don't know a lot about it. What I do know is based on some reading and then some personal experience. As you probably know, I was brought up in France. And in France, the medical world is not as unanimously committed to the one model of allopathic or drug-oriented or crisis-oriented medicine, which ours seems to be. Homeopathy has been around in France for a long time, and they were also one of the first countries to adopt acupuncture and some of the other alternative medicines when they came into prominence in the 60s and 70s. Obviously, chiropractors have been around, and they've been around here as well as in Europe. But my exposure to this was positive in some ways and negative in other ways. You know, for example, one of my friends had a rather serious operation, a surgery of the abdomen, and he elected to have acupuncture for the anesthetic, and it worked wonderfully. And he had little or no after effects. The scars healed beautifully and everything, so he kind of swears by it. I have another relative over there who went in hook, line, and sinker for homeopathy. And as far as any of us could tell, it didn't do anything, you know. It was, and we went and talked to our own doctor about it. And our own doctor was a more Western or traditional doctor, and he said, well, probably doesn't do any harm. But for many things, it's just not, it doesn't cure you. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't interrupt any process. And he then said that he felt himself that some Western techniques were too abrupt and too violent, but that didn't justify a whole alternative form. So there's quite a lot of debate about these things. About 5 years ago, the leading Christian periodical, the French equivalent of Christianity Today, came out with a cover story on homeopathy. And this magazine is edited by evangelicals, and the evangelical world there is divided on homeopathy. There's two kinds of division. The first division is it good medicine? And I'll talk a little bit about it. You probably know more about it than I do, but I'll talk about it in a minute. The other kind of division was a more interesting one in a way, and more fundamental one, and that is some Christians felt that because of its fairly well-documented occult origins, that it's something that Christians shouldn't mess with, that they ought to be leery of it, and there's a number of techniques that are direct descendants of some of the occult practices. For example, one of the things you do in homeopathy is you have this little ball on the end of a string, and you balance it back and forth to find out where a certain center of gravity is in your body. And it's a way of detecting pressure points. It's something like dowsing, but it's not really dowsing. And Orthodox homeopathists believe in this thing very strongly, and others, Christians or evangelicals of some stripe, think that this is just plain spiritualism, the kind of occult remnant. So there was a very lively debate, and Henri Blocher, who's one of the leading Reformed Baptist theologians in Europe, wrote an article saying that he thought that homeopathy was good. It was something that Christians could redeem, could use, and no problem. And so very, very controversial, but a lively debate. So these are the kinds of issues that are raised by these alternative medicines. The standard criticism of conventional medicine is that it emphasizes crisis intervention more to the expense of other things. And a little later I'll give you some statistics on this. But the criticism is that while it does this quite well, it isn't something that you want to depend on for the normal diseases or sicknesses or problems that you get. It's fine when you've had a car accident and you want to go into the emergency room and have your life saved or your leg set or whatever, or you know something has snapped on the tennis court or whatever. But it's not so good, so goes the criticism, with the many ailments that we have all the time. Ailments such as ones related to aging, arthritis, osteoporosis, high blood pressure, and so on. We had a chance to see this possible problem with my mother. About 2 years ago, she began to sort of fall apart. And she basically, we couldn't tell. The symptoms were that she was sluggish, flat emotionally, and paralysis began to set in various places. First, she couldn't walk so well, and then she had even trouble lifting her spoon to her mouth, and she just got sort of basically immobilized. So it took nurses, or practical nurses, to lift her from the bed to her chair and going to the bathroom and all that sort of thing, turning her over at night. So we sent her to Mount Sinai. They have a geriatrics clinic that's supposed to be state-of-the-art, and that we put her through all of their tests and their program. And we got a 10-page report back in which they had found some minor things here and there, but none of them explained her condition. And they recommended we go to a neurosurgeon. Went to the neurosurgeon. And each of these times you had to drag poor mom put her on a wheelchair and had to drive her into New York City. She lives in the suburbs. Just really very complicated. And he put her through some tests, some very uncomfortable tests. Well, the famous spinal tap and a couple of other things, CAT scans of all sorts. And he found a couple of minor things. Again, not only did it not explain her condition, but certainly surgery or any remedy that he could think of wasn't justified. So he ended up with this dear woman who was basically totally paralyzed and nobody could figure out anything wrong with her. When we finally told one friend about this, they said, oh, sure, depression. And we thought, well, okay. Nobody had really thought much about that. I mean, we all figured she was depressed and all, but that could be a cause. And we took her to a psychiatrist, and in a couple of hours, he had it pretty well figured out. She was depressed, and that was indeed the problem. And, you know, make a long story short, this long series of medical tests, very expensive and very stressful, on the model of traditional medicine. And nobody at the geriatrics ward of all places had even thought that it might be psychological. Now, this is an extreme case, but, you know, it shows, there he is, it shows a possible Well, the big buzzword for it would be a paradigm in traditional medicine that's more or less limited to crisis intervention or to drug therapy. Now, of course, I've given you a kind of worst-case scenario because it's close to home, but it does have, we're talking, Rick, about alternative medicines. That's the first topic here. And we've just been talking about the criticism of traditional, of conventional medicine. And there's lots of sides to all of this. And I was telling a story of my mother who got treated for something through conventional means, and it didn't turn out to amount to anything. And they finally realized it was a psychological problem. The problem on the other side, of course, is that there is a huge new group of medical consumers who take the baby boom generation and take advantage of perhaps what you might call their 60s authority problem and of the attention that a lot of the baby boomers want, and introduce all kinds of therapies and remedies and alternative approaches to them, and they find a really willing group. There's even New Age medicine, Wyndham Hill medicine. There's medicine connected with music therapy and all kinds of things. And of course, the baby boomers are particularly good targets for this because they seem to have their own paradigm of psycho jargon and lots of need for caressing and attention and so on, including diet, lots of big preoccupation with diet and so on. So there's a ready audience, a ready group for the of consumers for the alternative medicines. And some of them are good and some of them are not so good. So some of them are really extreme and odd. And some of them are probably have some value. Now, let me go over a couple of the types here. You're most familiar with these, but let me just go over a couple of the types because you may need to categorize them. And these are pretty much at random. The first non-traditional or non-Western type that you might want to consider is acupuncture. I guess maybe you all don't remember, but I remember very well when Scotty Reston of the New York Times went over to China in 71, and he had appendicitis, emergency appendectomy, and he had no real alternative but to go to an acupuncturist. And he went there, and the acupuncture's needles completely blocked all post-operative pain, and took care of his anesthesia and so on. And this was a big open window for the for Chinese medicine to the West, because previously, I think Westerners had certainly heard of it, but it wasn't anything that anybody would ever take seriously. It was thought of some sort of spooky occult thing. And there, of course, it turns out that it is a practice that has gone on for 2,000 years. And as you know, the principle is to take hair-thin needles or gentle finger pressure or sometimes in a modern variant, electrodes. And they stimulate various points along the body where healthful qi, that's the Chinese word, qi energy is said to flow. And these points are meant to be connected with various organs and body functions. And they have learned through years and years of tradition that one point here governs something over there. For example, there's a place near the wrist which governs, which is associated with breathing. And there's a place near the ankles that's associated with the liver and so on. I mean, it's completely different from our view of things, but it works on the whole. And today, 21 states actually license acupuncturists. In France, where I grew up, it's been licensed for a long time. And when one of our church friends, our church family friends, became a doctor, she was licensed in three branches: allopathy, homeopathy, and acupuncture. And she would sometimes confuse patients by, when they come in, they'd come with a problem, and she'd say, "Okay, this is your problem. Which kind of medicine would you like?" You know, and you know, the patient would have no idea what they'd like, and you want your doctor to decide those things. So 21 states license acupuncturists. And in many instances, insurance companies will actually cover all or part of it. In 24 states, however, only physicians can do this. It seems to be very effective in relieving certain chronic pain connected diseases like arthritis. It has been used very successfully easing the unhappiness of smokers and drinkers, or addicts who are trying to kick their habit. It's one of the more successful of the non-Western or alternative medicines that's come in. And there's some, you know, as in all of these, there's great anecdotes and miracle stories. People, they're strong believers in this. That's one of the forms. Go ahead.
Can I ask, because coming up to this point, I've always just, I've never researched it, but to me, that whole idea sounds a cult.
Yeah, okay.
It looks a cult. I mean, has there been any type of Western actual scientific study that, yes, there are these nerves running in these different
mm-hmm.
places, and so it is actually...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the study... Well, you see, the debate here that I'm trying to set up, and I will give some, I think, I hope, helpful answers as we get to the end of this, is whether this is going to be biblically appropriate, even though it may not fit Western canons. You know, I have a number of things to say about that. To answer your question, though, on an immediate front, yes, some Western-type study of acupuncture has been done, and there is general agreement that it does fit some of the things we do know, though there are areas of things that aren't quite so certain, but the scientists are confident that they'll find what it is on a Western model given time. So it's not just something that, you know, involves spirits or demons or whatever.
I kind of looked up on the same way as you can go to different groups, and they have hot coals, and they're fire walkers.
Yeah. Now, this is a bit different. I mean, of course, the problem is, well, I'll get into this later, but the problem is, many medicines, including some aspects of Western, have semi-occult origins. But does that make them forbidden if we redeem them or secularize them or bring them out of occult connotations? That's the question you want to ask. You know, is there no use for them? Because it's like saying, you know, it's a bit like saying, some rock music has occult associations. Does that mean you should never enjoy rock because you can't change those associations? That's the question that's being raised. And I don't think the evidence is all in, but I was telling Suzanne before you came in that when we were in France, the leading Christian periodical called Ictus, the equivalent of Christianity Today, had a main cover story on this whole thing connected with homeopathy. And there was fierce debate between those who felt that because it had possible occult origins, and I explained some of those, then it's completely forbidden for Christians. And those who said, well, a lot of things have occult origins, but that doesn't make them bad in themselves, as long as they can be used, can be redeemed. A second type is biofeedback. To some people, this looks like a mechanical mysticism. If you look at dials on a machine that measure your skin temperature, on the theory that stress cools and relaxation warms, or electrodermal response, which is like something like an electrocardiogram, the person who's wired with sensors can actually learn to control what usually happens in an involuntary way, okay? And this can include circulation. For example, circulation going to your toes, your fingertips, or to the extremities, you know, which is, a lot of people have trouble with that, you know, it makes them cold, or it can be more serious than that. Or nervous tension of various kinds. Some people get stiff around the neck or in the jaw or in the shoulders for no reason other than that they're tight. You can control this by learning to read these signals. You can even control heartbeat rates, and for the very advanced in this technique, you can control pupil size. Some people have noticed the similarities between this and certain disciplines involved with Eastern religions. In Zen Buddhism, and even in Hinduism, you have techniques of self-discipline where you learn to control parts of your body that you usually don't think about through concentration, through a process of learning to listen for things that you usually don't hear, and very, very, well-documented religious exercises give you this effect. And as a matter of fact, it has again been found effective in the West for folks who have things like asthma, certain kinds of epilepsy, and again, drug addiction. It is said that in the West, at any rate, no better treatment is known for Raynaud's disease, you know, which is where in women your fingers turn white and cold and so on. And now more and more insurance companies are covering this as well. And you can even find certain clinics and hospitals that offer this therapy. So that's another kind, biofeedback. And, you know, I remember when all this stuff started coming in, and the first reaction is, oh my, one more strange thing, you know, one more. From California, usually, you know. But now it's been tried and tested, and some of it seems to be really effective. This is more ancient, of course, and again, it has serious problems for Christians, I think, but needs to be known and talked about, and that is hypnosis. You remember Freud, of course, and others did a lot with this. And it according to fairly recent and fairly reliable statistics, over 15,000 health people of some kind practice hypnosis. Now, it is said that hypnosis is not a cure, strictly, but it can be a help in speeding up healing of various kind, again, giving up bad habits. That seems to be a big theme here, like smoking or drinking or whatever. Or pain, dealing with pain. And you probably know this, but it's quite well documented that when you've been burned, serious burn patients heal faster after hypnosis or regular hypnosis, and often have fewer complications. Again, some is known in a Western sense, but a lot is not known about exactly how this stuff works. We know, I mean, you see the movies on this and the cartoons and so on, and it's kind of a joke, but there is something to the fact that you concentrate and focus on a particular image, and then you have a voice, a soothing voice, or some object that swings. You ask the patient to suspend your normal patterns of thought, and this does not work as well for everybody, because we each have different ways of dealing with an authority transfer, which is what's involved. I suspect, for example, that I would be very bad at this because I hate losing control. Even for the sake of the good, I wouldn't want it. But there are people who don't mind that. I mean, I don't know whether this is fair or not, and I wish Laura were here; she could help us on this. But I suspect that perhaps people who more easily give in to drunkenness or to things like that—not that I'm saying their motives are the same—but who can may be the better hypnosis patients because they're more willing to let something take them over. One theory is that the limbic system, which is the part of the brain which is linked to involuntary response and emotions and so on, and blood pressure, is actually stimulated under hypnosis and is able to react to external suggestions in a way that is usually not the case. So they're suggestible. And it seems to be a way to bypass certain things and to speed up healing and relieve pain and so on. I know several people who claim that they were able to give up smoking because of hypnosis, including my mother-in-law. Couple of other ones here.
Yeah. And, you know, we have to answer to God for our actions. I mean, to me, that's one of the reasons why I never want to get drunk, because supposedly that releases freedom and inhibitions, and we're more likely to do something, but we still have to answer for it.
Yeah. Of course, you could stretch the point and say that if you accept to go under anesthesia, you are putting yourselves in the hand of somebody else, and he or she will cut you up, and you might have to answer for that because of your body, but I guess it's not strictly parallel, because in the case of hypnosis, it's part of your voluntary system that's being accentuated at the expense of another, so it might, yeah, that is definitely the problem for Christians, and all of these have a similar kind of problem for Christian, which is a transfer of authority, but it may not be as, I mean, people have pointed out that taking drugs a lot, from antibiotics to painkillers to sleeping pills to whatever, is another way to transfer your authority to someone else or to something else. You know, it just happens to be a chemical, and we're more used to the chemical paradigm. But that something like that is also involved. Another therapy is guided imagery. Some of these are bizarre, okay? If you get the patients into some kind of very relaxed state, the therapist, or sometimes the tape recording, guides the patient. And they guide them to visualize their condition, and they've got all these techniques for doing that. And then kind of think it off or think it away. This was used in the 70s to help athletes get rid of pain. It's something like the Lamaze technique of childbirth, where the pain of your contractions and so forth is displaced by a strong voluntary action based on guided imagery or guided or counting or all kinds of things. It's a kind of power positive thinking, it really is what it amounts to. But it's refined and to a place where it can be very effective, all these mental disciplines. This technique is supposed to reduce stress as well. You're supposed to, if you're a nervous person, you're supposed to picture yourself in a soothing environment like a beach and a palm tree and listen to the water in your mind. And the idea is to sort of use all of your senses for this. Curiously, some cancer patients using this technique seemed to be able to increase their immune response. That doesn't say they sort of survived more than others, but it seemed to make them stronger at any rate. So a lot of this is the fuzzy line between mind and body. Of course, all right, another technique which is very familiar, I think, to most of us is chiropractic. Fairly good studies have shown that manipulating the spine can be and often is effective in getting rid of lower back pain, which a lot of people suffer from. And some 30 U.S. hospitals have chiropractors on their staff. Doctors usually are leery about it for a lot of reasons, and some of them good. But and chiropractors have had a hard time getting accepted by the AMA and other organizations. But there are certain kinds of conditions connected with the spine that really are cured or helped by, quote, adjusting the vertebrae. Beyond that, there's not a lot of proof that it works, and some chiropractors claim an awful lot. You know, they claim they can get rid of all kinds of things. Those are some. There are many other therapies. One of the ones I mentioned at the very beginning is homeopathy. Now, homeopathy treats diseases by administering tiny doses of substances that might ordinarily cause the same symptoms as the ailment. Tiny amounts of arsenic, for example, or tiny amounts of belladonna, all these things that would, in any bigger dose, would knock you off, that they found are the same or parallel to the ones that cause the symptoms of the ailment, has some capacity to distract or ward off the cause of these ailments. For example, in France, they use thyme, lavender, and rosemary for healing wounds. And as I was saying before you got here, we have a couple of friends who swear by this. We have not ourselves had, we tried one of our relatives actually tried this for, now what was it now that she had? Something. I've forgotten what it was. Oh, well, I think fatigue. And this friend of mine said, oh, you've got to go see my homeopathist. And it was a Protestant, which in France is, you know, even more of an endorsement. And our friend, our relative went and had several sessions and did all the right things. I mean, it's odd for Westerners. They give you tiny little pellets in a little blue vial, and the human hand is not supposed to touch them. So there's a gadget on the top so that you push one up into the cup, and then you put it directly on your tongue so it can't get to your hands because your hands corrupt it. And you have to take these fairly regularly, like, depending on what it is, every hour one of these pellets, or every 2 hours one of these pellets. And you also have to swear off mint, which ruins the effects of almost all of the homeopathic things for some odd reason. This friend of mine who swore by it was on our faculty in Aix-en-Provence, and he's a very bright Frenchman, and he used to be a Tibetan monk before he was a Christian, but he believed strongly in homeopathy. So in faculty meeting, you see him take this thing, whoop, wonder what he's doing. He's taking his homeopathy. And it's hard to know exactly what is happening. In general, all of these alternative medicines don't square, as you were pointing out very well, with Western science or physiology. However, my view is that there's good and bad on both sides. I strongly believe in the good of traditional Western medicine. I think that its history is profoundly involved with Christianity, with the breakaway from Aristotle, and with the establishment of a more reformed view of the creation and of the circulatory system and the respiratory system and so forth, and a better understanding of the organs, and all of that is something that is has given us some very reliable approaches to curing certain diseases, curing most diseases, or at least knowing enough about them to know what can be done. And I think the suspicion of antibiotics that you find in the alternative people is misplaced. It can be overused, obviously. You can prescribe antibiotics much too strongly. Some doctors are drug crazy, you know, and they just prescribe something to get rid of the problem, and they only see you for 10 minutes. And, I think one can complain about certain parts of traditional Western medicines. I think some of that complaint is valid. It may not be the doctor's fault. It may be that the doctor's caught by busy schedule and everything else. But I do think that it is, in general, something that we don't have to be ashamed of. We have to be, I think, very vigilant to move our medicine away from simply crisis and intense remedies to maybe more general health care. And preventive medicine, I think, is really important these days, and health education. You know, I've been pleading for that all through the course. But I think that's no reason to put into question the entire structure of our program. Then, on the other hand, I would say that on the alternative medicines, there's strengths and weaknesses as well. I think there's a lot to learn. I don't think we need to sort of lump it all together as occult, though indeed much of it has some sort of quasi-occult origin. Energy is a big theme in alternative healing. And this has no real equivalent in our Western medicine, except, you know, we can notice weak electromagnetic fields. In many, many alternative medicines, that's the main thing. I think there's probably many things about the human body that we just don't know through the Western model, and we should be open to that. The Tibetan Lama doctors, they talk about 36 pressure points in the body, which are centers of pressure that tell you a whole lot about how your body is going. Whether they're accurate or not scientifically, they're onto something that seems to really fit, something that happens. Why not be open to that and look at it and study it and so forth? I do believe that some of the softer medicines probably are helpful for certain types of diseases and certain types of bad conditions. On the other hand, I think to reject all conventional cures and go wholeheartedly into unconventional ones is very naive, particularly with the baby boom generation being so open and naive about certain things. There's actually been a lot of harm done by the misapplied alternative medicines. You know, a badly trained chiropractor can do very serious permanent damage to you. It's important to be aware that no medicine, whatever its promise, is going to kind of be the panacea. It's just not possible. We're living in a fallen world. We have death. And I think we should be open to these things, but not think of any of them as a cure. And then some of them really are pretty wacky. For example, I have very serious problems with the technique of macrobiotics. I have been pretty friendly with a couple of people in the health food business, and who happen to be Christian people, and I'm not a health food faddist or anything like that, but they, in talking about macrobiotics, assure me that it's not only unproven but positively harmful to have the kind of diet that macrobiotics prescribe for certain sicknesses. Like, if you're dying of cancer, aromatherapy and microbiotics is probably going to speed your end. It takes very thin herbs. Bamboo is the big one, and you eat very sparsely, and you eat that, you know. And my friend saw some people just wither away and die because of this, you know. And they believed in it strongly, but it wasn't doing anything for them. So I think there are some remedies that are really shaky, but others that probably have a lot to offer within the limited context of what they do. And I think Christians don't have to fear that just because they may have had some semi-occult origin, that there's no use for it whatsoever. I think we're in the business of redeeming things from all over, and we should realize that Western culture isn't the only culture that has a right to speak out on these things, any more than it's the only culture that should speak out on other issues, whether it be the arts or business or whatever. So. That's my sort of very general, but I hope somewhat balanced conclusion on these things.